the 60 seconds of bomb the cake stand. Invite 1,000 people into the hotel. You never get in trouble, but go straight to hell. Say, jump out of line, start to unwind. Before you gotta get back to the grind. And don't waste a minute of your summertime. Sing it one more time. Jump out of line, start to unwind. Before you gotta get back to the grind. And don't waste a minute of your summertime. Corona and the line.
Welcome back, guys. Stroll Show.
Hello, hello. How's it going, Internet? How's it going? How's your Sunday afternoon treating you? I hope you're getting your bagel, because we have, what did I say last week? Audio cream cheese?
We have the audio cream cheese, yeah, to get us going.
Anyway, so you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, where the Stroll Show. I'm the C, sitting next to me.
Yo, what's the flow, guys? What's up?
And so you know, today we have very special guests.
Yeah, we do. These are.
We're going to get to them in a second.
We will. We'll tease them. We'll tease them at the beginning.
They are Frog Belly and Symphony. Friends of mine, my band, Cinema, played with them a few weeks ago, and they totally ripped my face off, and it was amazing. And I think we should play a song from their most recent album, right? They put
out.
Yeah,
we got some of that juice.
Yeah, we got a hot track.
A track or two.
I always want to say that on mic at a radio show. We got a hot track that's dropping.
We're dropping it right now. It's like K-Rock out in L.A. or something. And they dropped the new Blink-182 album, but
it's WRFB,
Radio Free Brooklyn.
Yeah, okay. So this song is called "Patch of Blue." They just put a new video out for it, so put links to that on our Facebook and all that stuff. So
we'll share and all that good stuff.
So without further ado, let's listen to "Patch of Blue," and then we'll come back with Frog Belly and Symphony on Radio Free Brooklyn.
Awesome.
We'll be right back. loss and purposeless resemblance to an egg. Firing a volley from the cannons of the name.
All right, guys, you're listening to The Stroll Show on Radio Free Brooklyn. That was a first look by Frog Belly and Symphony. And we got those guys sitting right here in studio with us right now. Yes. Welcome in, guys. We just want to welcome you guys to The Stroll Show.
Hello.
Thanks. Hi.
We have Thomas, or Tomas. When I first heard about you or met you, I thought I heard you say Tomas.
It's completely up to you.
Oh, it's
people say Tommy, Tomas, or Thomas.
Because Ev calls you
Tomas.
He does, and I like that. I like when people do that.
It sounds fancy.
Which is the proper way?
Well, there is no proper way.
There is no. Which way do you prefer? Maybe we'll go with that.
Well, most English people call me Tommy, and most of the Americans just call me Thomas, but I can't do an American accent very well. Thomas.
And I feel like we probably make it sound dirty, too. We're like, yo, Thomas.
Well, we have Thomas, Tommy, Tomas, and Liz, just Liz.
Yes.
From Frog Belly and Symphony. So maybe let's talk a little bit about that song, because it's kind of related in a way to how I know you guys, kind of through the producer who worked on that with you, right?
Yeah.
Maybe let's talk about that for a minute. Little Marty Beasy, a little man named Martin Beasy, beautiful man.
Yeah, Martin's a friend of ours. We Thomas met him in Germany, actually, and when we were starting this band in New York, we called him up and hung out and showed him some of our new stuff. Yeah.
Wow. That's kind of how it seems to work with that man.
He works in mystical ways.
Mysterious ways. Yeah. Unlike
we sent him an iPhone recorded demo, like just the first few song ideas that Liz and I had put together at that time, and we sent it over to Brooklyn, and he said, "Why don't you come over and record it?" Record stuff with me. And we didn't even have a band at that time.
Wow.
So it was just the two of us. And in the meantime, we picked up a guitarist and brought him to New York as well. And then we had to find a drummer over here, which
seems like you always have to do, find a drummer.
Before we found a drummer, though, Martin was kind of banging on some buckets in our basement.
That's amazing.
Oh, so he was kind of filling
on
drums?
Or
he was kind of just filling in for what would be a drummer one day?
That makes sense. He likes to, from when I record with him, he likes to play the stairs too. I've seen him play the stairs.
Well, like a set of stairs, you walk up.
Steps in the studio that lead down into the dungeon of
his specific staircase.
I guess that tells its own story about his enthusiasm for music.
Totally.
Like he goes into the room, the band starts playing, and he's like in it. He becomes a part of this of the
He's
experience.
A member of the band in a way, you know.
There's no one like him. No one records like Martin Beasy.
Yes. So you said you just messaged him out of the blue. So you didn't meet him while he was on tour and
Thomas did.
You did, yeah. So okay, maybe we should talk about that for a minute because we have a kind of an international group with us,
across the pond.
Atlantic,
that's the phrase, right?
Bicontinental,
something like that, yes.
Yeah.
So in case you didn't notice, Thomas is
Tommy.
From
I am well, I grew up in Hamburg.
Oh really?
Yeah.
In Germany?
In Germany. Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay.
And then I moved to the UK, and I'm still kind of living there. Liz and I are both going in and out of Sheffield, UK, and Brooklyn.
Oh, wow. That's got to be tough, though, right? Because, it's like a six-hour flight.
Yeah, it is, yeah. It
takes a bit of organization.
I can imagine the international, security.
Yeah, it's everything, the music facilitates a lot of that. By itself, because we're touring and then we're recording over here and then we're touring over there. I have a studio in Sheffield where I produce other bands as well, where I'm running a record label, and we have several things. And Liz mostly plays traditional music over here in New York, but she also likes to go to Ireland because it's her ancestry. And we have an English guitarist and a drummer from Brooklyn. So
great drummer from Brooklyn, by the way. He's awesome.
Ray Rizzo,
He blew my face off. And he was singing while playing, which I'm always like, that's one thing I can't do as a drummer. It's just
I don't know how guys do that.
I can't focus that many things at one time, like my hands, my feet, and my voice. No.
Yeah, and then he'll have a little synth off to the side, and he'll be like,
son of a bitch.
He keeps busy on there. He keeps busy out there. So how did you guys meet? Because it kind of seems unique, because Liz, you're from Brooklyn. Right.
I'm and originally from Boston, but I've been here for 12 years.
Okay. And then, and Tommy is from, you know, Germany. So how'd you guys kind of meet up to start, you know?
I was on tour in Germany with a band, a Brooklyn band called Emmanuel and the Fear. And we did a show with a band called Kid Decker that Thomas was playing with. And yeah, Thomas and I met and just like kept making plans after that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The rest is, as they say, history. That's beautiful. I mean, I don't know if you guys want this out there in the world, but I mean, you guys are in a relationship.
We're married.
Yeah, married.
tied the knot.
So I always, because we've interviewed another band that was in two people who were married were in the band together. And it seems like a kind of a perfect situation for a band in a way, but also could, I feel like, does it cause any undue stress, or is it like something that, I mean, you know, you always have the music no matter what, if you have fights about this or that or whatever, you know, there's always like, oh, let's just go jam and like have fun and stuff like that. Like, I feel like that's a nice undercurrent of a relationship to have is music, you know? They're pointing at each other. You answer.
You answer,
you bastard. Don't me. But someone answer.
I guess you have to kind of like just designate times to do certain things.
Yeah,
sometimes.
You have to
kind of like
separate,
carve out certain times for certain things. But, yeah.
I've bumped into a lot of couples who are doing their thing together, whether they're running like an events company, management, you know, growing trees or whatever, and we just happen to make music. I don't think, as you know, if you have that concept, yeah, we want to, you know, share a professional life as well as a private one.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's possible in every realm, really. Mm. And yeah.
Yeah, so do you guys feel like that it brings out the best in both of you? Like when you're playing music, like you can kind of like one inspires the other type of, ooh, as I hit this turntable.
Or worse.
It's definitely like a, I don't know, I feel like performing with Thomas is really awesome because we have that deep connection.
Right. Yeah, I could tell when I saw you guys play that there's like you guys are like the stars of the band, and like you're like kind of interaction with each other, like not even like you were like looking at each other and like elbowing each other or anything. You were on separate sides of the stage, but I could definitely tell like all of the essence of the band was permeating from you guys, you know? So, and I could tell you're having a great time up there. And Liz, you are a joy to watch. Not that you are not, Tom. I'm not saying you're not. You have your own thing, like performance arty kind of, at least at that show. I don't know, do you usually dress up like Clockwork Orange at shows?
It varies. Oh, like okay, seriously, okay. It's always like how I feel on that very day. Like I always have a few outfits in my suitcase, and seriously, and I you know, look it up just before the show. It's like, right, today's that one.
Really?
But it's not, you know, it's not like too deliberate as well. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, for us, it's like Liz and I are, you know, we often ask each other how we feel just before a show and how to bring the lyrical message across, because that's one big part of a performance, really. It's totally. Always been like, okay, we have something to say, and now we have 45 minutes to do it.
Right.
And
you know, you want to make the most of those minutes.
Yeah.
Any way you can. I mean, that's one thing I find that is hard for at least my band, not to make it about us, but it relates, is that I feel like it's hard to focus on that extra element where, you know, like lighting or like, you know, I've seen bands that have like floodlights and stuff that like go along with the bass drum or something, bands that dress up and like they're all wearing the same thing. Like for some reason, I find that hard to grasp. And I'm so worried about playing and stuff like that. Like it's impressive that you have that extra layer that kind of glues everything together in a way. Like,
well, like
it makes
like yourself,
sense.
Like yourself, like you have a band like Cinema, which I love, by the way, absolutely fantastic band. Everybody has to check it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cinema.
Blush over here.
Not because it's hot.
But, no, thank you.
But you know how it is with like
it's hot.
Really,
it is hot in here.
Like outward performance, like, you know, if you want to really send the message across, there's no holding back. You have to put yourself out there. Like
right.
You have to, you know, it's your heart on the string, your lips, your eyes, like everything. You know, there's not much of a filter. And the more you acknowledge it, the less it becomes relevant what you're wearing, what mood you were in before the show. You know, it just becomes its own monster, really.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Do you feel like putting on certain outfits or it helps you get into a certain mindset to kind of perform?
What it's about. More than I don't look into the mirror even. It's just like, okay, I feel like this, and then right. And then, you know, it's about that, and then you rock it. But yeah.
It separates you from like your day, like normal day.
I totally. It's almost like I always liken a lot of music to like pro wrestling, right? It's like, not that anybody should, but I'm a big wrestling fan. But beside the point, like when
don't,
a wrestler,
don't apologize for that. don't no need to apologize.
I'm not an apologetic wrestling fan. Anyway, so I see like when a guy puts on his trunks or something, he's ready to go out there and commit to that performance that he's about to do in the ring, because we all know, you know, spoiler alert, wrestling is fake, right? So it's
breaking news right here.
But it's kind of the same thing that applies, I think. It's like it kind of helps you get prepared to give the goods, as my cousin Ev would say from CinemaSim.
It's like you kind of put on this, you know, you get like your battle armor. You're going to see, this is where I kind of differ. I've never actually performed on stage or anything like that, so I don't know the preparation that kind of goes into, or like the mindset you have to get into to get, you know, ready to rock or whatever like that. So I don't really know.
Yeah, I think from seeing you guys live, and you know, I don't know how often you guys are even together to practice, but I mean, some of those songs seem very, I mean, complicated, and especially the vocal intertwining that happens a lot throughout the songs. Like, how is practicing that stuff? Like, is it difficult, or
I guess it's a long process, really. It's Thomas and I will sit in the studio and write these things together and kind of learn it as it's being made, and then show it to the other guys over the internet or email or whatever,
so like
pass
that.
Things back and forth. And
then
we typically have you know, a chunk of rehearsals, and then go on tour,
mm-hmm.
and then try to record some stuff after that.
It's
and
key to tour before kind of recording.
Condense
I think,
it all into the period of time that we can actually be together.
Right.
Is it tough to like get all you guys together, since you're kind of on both, you know, two different continents, basically? Is it like tough to practice and things like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
I can.
The answer is yes.
Yes. So how do you guys practice? Like, how is that a
rarely?
Rarely.
Yeah. That is actually. You know, we go on tour or we go in the studio, and then we part again because, you know, everyone's always busy, and everyone, you know, we're trying to squeeze the most out of the time that we actually have together. So we usually just start playing shows straight away. And there's a lot of time on tour, you know, there's a lot of off time on the van and stuff, so you can discuss stuff and then try it at soundcheck and then just play it. And as you go along, it just, you know, settles in.
Yeah.
So you're kind of like, not like learning on the fly, but you're kind of like, as you're playing live shows, you're kind of practicing at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we do practice sometimes because we have to. Like everybody has to.
Yeah, yeah.
Like especially the most, you know, the more like, like elaborate song arrangements sometimes have to be practiced.
Yeah, and I think practicing on stage, I mean, maybe not practicing on stage, but performing new stuff live, even when it's not fully done, can sometimes help the song to grow. Right, like the changes, you know, without you know, and I find that in my experience too, it's just like maybe we'll do something different that night that then becomes part of the song. You know what I mean? Like, so I think I like that progression. It's like practice, tour, then record. Don't record before you've played it live a couple of times. I think I feel like some bands they get too wrapped up in like, okay, we gotta make it like sound like the record or something, you know, like, but I think the record should be like a snapshot of what it was that day that you did. But I mean, for you guys, maybe it's a little more complicated because there's a lot of layers and a lot of, you know, really the vocals really stand out to me, the way you guys can tag team. It's almost like Thomas will start singing a line, and then all of a sudden Liz is singing that line. I'm just like, what? It's like this like weird swirling hurricane of like lyrics and shit. It's pretty pretty amazing.
And there's a lot of different like sounds going on too. I know it's a lot of different instrumentation, and I think that's really impressive since you guys say you don't practice as often as you'd like. Right. So it's very
Well, Liz is a multi-instrumentalist, which is very impressive. The two different, completely different instruments, a string instrument and a piano thing. It's pretty, that's, you know, I mean, maybe they're more similar than I realize. I'm not, you know, a professional in either of those. So do you find it's...
They're pretty different. I can imagine. But I've been doing both of them for a long time, so they feel...
So what's your background like? Did you go to like school and stuff for it, or?
Yeah, well, I grew up playing. My dad plays fiddle as well, so he taught me some traditional Irish stuff. But I always had a classical teacher, and I went to college for violin.
Oh wow!
Oh wow! That's really cool. Crazy.
I mean, that's a commitment, right? To go to school for music. I don't think I could have made that.
Yeah, how does that work? Is it you're only always playing music, or is it like there's actual classes involved too? Like, is it just music classes, or is there like history?
And history and
no biology and
no like math, no like calculus or something.
I did have to take a statistics class.
Oh, it was core.
That's a tough class. That is a tough class, statistics.
Really, yeah,
never did really well in that class.
Yeah, well, you were there for the rock,
the fiddle. Yeah. So let's go, Tom. You were talking about your label, and I don't know if we mentioned his label on here,
This is what Tom does on the side when he's not, maybe not on the side, but his other project that he's working on when he's not in Frog Band Symphony, when they're not touring and stuff. You run Labelship, based out of the UK.
Yeah, it's moved. It's been moving with me. So wherever I went, you know, I'd kind of take the label with me. It's currently in Brooklyn.
Yeah,
it's a good place to be
on
right
the
now.
Radio. Essentially.
Oh, so it's like in your back pocket.
My back pocket. Yeah, I started that label way before I started the band, so it's always been an obsession for me to make music. So I made music with and for other bands as well. So I've always, you know, I started working in recording studios in the year 2000 or something, and you know, just, you know, learning by doing style, like tried to make, you know, records with bands. And my own projects as well, but right. You know, also external projects. And because I wanted to do that, and then the whole collapse of the independent record industry, like there weren't any labels around anymore, they all went bankrupt, there were no distributors, at least in Europe at that time. It was like a really like agonizing situation, because you know, there were so many good bands on the go, and they just had no platform whatsoever to put their music out. And I was right in the middle of it producing this stuff. So I thought, well, let's make a label. Everyone called me crazy because, you know, all the labels were disappearing, and I was, you know, I was
making a label at the exact worst time to try
exactly,
to do it.
Yeah.
But what better time, right? Same time.
But it turned out to be like quite a clever move, because it always kept me really independent. Like, oh my, you know, I can put music out that I like, that I produce, of bands that I respect, and you know, music that I think the world should, you know, see. And it makes me really, you know, and now I'm nearly 10 years in, it makes me feel, you know, like I've done something almost by accident that was really good. And now it facilitates a lot of the, you know, a lot of the traveling, a lot of the connection. You know how music is like an international network anyway. We're like, we know each other because of, you know, playing shows together. Yep, and, yep. You know, there's more connections to be, totally. You know.
Well, we actually met in Germany, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. That's no joke. That's another story entirely.
And the whole networking thing, the whole networking aspect, and like bands helping each other out, booking each other tours or going on tour with each other and stuff, you know, that's just wonderful.
Totally. So, I mean, we Thomas and Liz have brought us gifts.
They have, and I actually have them set up as well.
Oh, you've...
I figured it out. I was playing with the buttons. Well, I turned my mic off so you guys wouldn't know I was doing things over here.
Oh, that's cool. I love you so much. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. That's okay.
Was that on mic?
Oh, sorry, that was that. That's forever. That's forever.
Thomas, yeah. Maybe you could tell us about this.
Yeah, because I don't know if I can read this.
All right. Yeah. Well, he's a true performance artist. You were mentioning the word performance art earlier. So that girl is, I met her at an art show, and she's truly one of the weirdest performers I've ever met. She's from Germany. Her name is, she's a Tunisian girl from Germany, called Frau Kraushaar, which loosely translates as Mrs. Curly Hair.
which is kind of accurate in this picture.
Yeah. More or less.
She's a high energy performer, on the, more on the electronica side of things. Mm-hmm. So she does like weird programming and weird disco danceable beats with like dadaistic lyrics. Mm-hmm. And I really like the record because it's one of the most playful things I've ever held in my hands. What
caused you to sign her? How did that happen for you to put out her record on labelship?
I went to her, I think it was like a college exhibition or something. So mm-hmm. It was just an art show, and she was just yelling all over the place. And she was just throwing all this dadaistic sentiment out, which made me feel like, I don't know. I had to sit down for a minute because it was really quite intense, but wow. In such a surrealistic way. It's almost like rewiring your brain through intensity and like really clever and intelligent like wording and performance. So I was just really impressed with her.
I'm sold. I want to hear it.
You guys ready?
What is the name of this track? Track 5.
Oh, it's Cats on Crack.
It says Cats on Crack.
Cats on Crack. Listen to Radio Free Brooklyn. We'll be back after this with Frog Belly on the Stroll Show.
Is it not going? I don't think it's going.
This one.
All right, hang on. We got a little technical difficulty on that, but
snafu.
We are, the technicians are working on it as we speak.
Yeah, as in
as in me.
As in us.
I'm looking for it's playing, but it's not playing at the same time. But give me one second.
We're not sure if it was playing, actually. There's a new setup here at Radio Free. And maybe we'll do some fix it up music. Do, 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 do. No.
Is it, you hear it?
Nah.
That's right.
We rolled the dice. And we got Snake Eyes.
Yeah, we rolled. We came up Snake Eyes on that one. It's like we're playing craps.
We were a little worried about trying to do that before we started. So
maybe next time.
Maybe next time. This is unfortunate. Maybe you can put up on your phone while we.
Is it on? Is it on any?
It's on all the things.
It's on all the things.
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe we could shuck and jive a little bit, and Steve can hook us up. But so. Oh, sorry.
Check that out. There's a read I have to do.
Oh, there's a read.
There is a read. So let me get to this first. This is actually a good way to get into this. So this is a little something going on in the area. So please join Brooklyn Pride in celebrating our 20th anniversary. There are great events during Brooklyn's Pride Week, June 6th through 11th, from Monday's reception at Borough Hall to a full day full of activities on Saturday, June 11th. The day starts with a 5K in Prospect Park, then our festival, entertainment, family space, and parade all on 5th Avenue. Check out our full week of events and learn about getting involved. Now, there's a little typo there. On our website, brooklynpride.org. So if you guys are free this coming week, you know, want to give that a little, just check it out, you know.
Yeah, that was well done.
You like
your
that?
First time.
Yeah, I feel like Joe Beningo on The Fan. That's where my inspiration comes from.
All right, well, that was a perfect amount of time.
That was good, right? So now you guys check
well
that out.
Well done, and that was a well-timed discovery of this thing that we weren't aware of before.
I know, yeah. I looked down and I saw it. I said, you know what? It says, please read. I will read it.
But yeah, so now we're going to play you Cats on Crack.
Now we got it. This is the way we know how to do it. So
let's make it happen.
We're going to make sweet magic happen.
Crack.
Oh yeah, that's Cats on Crack right there. And I gotta say, that is a sexy song. That is sexy.
Yeah, there's some sex in that.
Oh yeah. Oh man, yeah.
So okay.
Let's
unpack that a little bit. Let's dissect this. How is that made? Are you at all involved in like the recording process of some of the stuff that you release on Labelship, or is it?
I wasn't, but somebody you know was. You know who produced that record?
Who?
Patrick.
Really?
Patrick Miller.
That makes so much sense.
Yep.
That makes so much sense. I love Patrick. Oh, God, I have this picture on my phone of him that I look at.
It's his production.
I'm not lying.
He made those beats. He made those beats, and he kind of, him and Sylvia, which is Frau Kraushaar's real name, him and Sylvia were sitting together for about 2 years, putting this like craziness together. Yeah.
Steve, just so you know, Patrick is, first time I toured with Martin in Europe, he was playing synths, keys,
oh cool,
like auxiliary kind of stuff, sounds, and you guys are friends with him too. I mean, obviously you guys are all great musicians, so you should be friends.
Yeah, Patrick is a very good friend of mine. He's a very interesting musician. I mean, he studied classical guitar, and the music he makes is like so different from that. You wouldn't bring the two things together, because he's the most experimental. Like, he writes, he programs music software just to be able to make like weirder beats that are weirdly out of time or stuff like that. Like, he's truly experimenting with the world of electronic music production, but coming from like a profound background.
Yeah.
And that's really, you know, it's quite special.
And he's so like nonchalant about it, really. I would never know that he's like classically trained guitarist. He's like, I could see why he's a pleasure to have on tour, you know. Like, and there was times where we were driving, and like there was spots where, you know, Martin just couldn't drive anymore. Martin BC, we're talking about, Patrick was the only one who knew how to do stick, and he was like, okay, I'll do it. You know, like, he was so easygoing. And the last time I saw him, it was actually at is that Frappant?
All right, yeah, yeah.
Is that the place I met, where the night I met you guys?
Frappant is this art space that is a really interesting, has a really interesting stories in Hamburg. Maybe for Brooke, especially, you know, telling a little story about, you know, a German squatting scene to Brooklyn, as it used to be like a massive squat. So there was a whole shopping precinct that was the old Frappant, like a whole, like a really like a multi-story shopping precinct that was squatted in the early 2000s by artists. Really, they just took it over. It was stood in a really, really prominent place in the middle of Hamburg, and they took it over, turned it into an art scene, and then the council couldn't, you know. Now it's an IKEA, by the way. That same, oh,
the way it goes.
That same, yeah. But they gave him a house the same size.
Oh wow!
So they gave him like this massive house that you played at, and that's Frappant too.
So IKEA gave them the house?
No, not IKEA.
The council.
Because there were just too many of them, and they were all like running, you know, their stuff quite professionally, and they weren't like junkies or anything. They were just creative people.
Yeah.
You usually think of squatters like that.
One of the successful stories of how like people can be taken seriously if they're just, you know, if they're being constructive about what they're doing, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's impressive. I feel like that would not happen in Brooklyn. I mean, I don't know much, but I don't know if they would be giving away like areas for artists to go to. I feel like they're trying to get rid of that and put up condos instead.
That's another question I was going to ask you guys. You know, from your experience in both, this might be like maybe an obvious question, but like from your experience in both sides of the world, you know, how do you think Brooklyn compares to Germany and
the
places
UK.
In Europe and England? I mean, I have not been to England yet. That is not the one spot I haven't been to. So I don't know, but I know that's kind of like difficult to tour there, and they have weird things about making money over there while touring. But Germany is a little more free and easy, seemingly.
It's a huge question, and I, you know, that's a whole radio show of its own. Just in very, very simple words, there are differences, and there are similarities as well. People are people everywhere you go, and people do things very, you know. People just make stuff like on all levels, and then there's regulations and there's systems in place that are regulating the things that people do. So, you know, there's things that are similar, things that are better and worse on both sides. I would say the United States is quite an impressive place because it's so big. People have places to go to. You're traveling the country, and it's just, you know, on being on tour, you can see a lot of places, and you know, you go to Detroit and it's a half deserted city, and then you go to New York City and it's just packed, and you have, you know, those things. You don't have stuff like that in Europe so much because it's, you know, it's pretty much packed kind of everywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
But I guess more specifically, like the music scene in general, like how does it compare, like booking shows, finding places to play? That, I mean, I find, just from my few times being there, it seems they're more accommodating. You know, like it's a little harder to tour in America because, you know, they're not so willing to help you find a place to stay or make sure you get fed. Like, I know when I play in Europe, every time it's always, you know, breakfast the next morning, dinner the night before, and a bed. And it makes it very easy for touring bands to make that happen. So
seems like there's more government-funded art spaces in a place like Germany, but whereas here in the States, I feel like the DIY scene is healthier.
Oh, really?
Or like in a different way, though. And in England, I don't know. It's
a very different story again.
Yeah.
In England, there's like a massive pub scene, and there's a lot of the old like landlord pub, like music, you know, music venues are often either function rooms in pubs, or you play the bar itself, or you're completely detached in like a DIY space, which is then a different thing where you have to set up, where you literally have to bring your own PA system because they don't have anything but a room. So yeah, so it can be very accommodating because you have, you know, you have like a social club or a pub like looking after you, and or you have to sort it out yourself. But England is a special kind of thing because it has such a heritage in music in general as well. Like Ireland is similar, I would say, because there's like folk music and there's music.
I can't wait to go to Ireland.
It's awesome.
And it's kind of everywhere anyway. And then being a rock band is just, you know, you can, if you have like common denominators with like, which we have with the folk world, so you can tap into that.
Right.
But, Yeah, I feel like it seems like Europe, like, you know, stuff, they're very like appreciative of the arts, you know, like they're very like artistic, you know, like the romance language, all this stuff is very,
yeah,
it's very beautiful. I feel like United States really doesn't, we don't promote art, I feel like, here. At least I don't notice it.
Well, it seems like the schools, right? Like the first thing that gets cut if a school needs, you know, funding or budget cuts, it's like...
It's like music, art programs.
Music and art gets cut, and it's like, make sure you got to learn the math and science because that's what's going to pave the way for the future. We need, like, you know, technology advanced people or something. You know?
Everyone just, everything's about business.
I remember specifically Obama saying something like that, like during one of his speeches, like
the math and science,
like that's
thing, yeah,
getting the more attention. And you know, I mean, I went to a Catholic school, which is not funded by the state or government or anything. It's private, and we didn't even have art or music at all. We, wow, you know, we had like religion.
Yeah, a lot of religion. We always in church every Friday, first yeah, Friday of the month. Yeah. We're always at church.
I had a religion textbook. Wrap your mind around that.
But then the whole world comes to New York to make music or to present their art. So, like, it's, you know, I think it's kind of the situation where grass is always greener on the other side.
At least
know?
It seems that way. At least from our outside perspective, it's kind of like, oh, it must be better there, right?
Yeah, you have to arrange yourself with any, like, wherever you are. Like, there's, you know, there's pros and cons.
Yeah, I guess it finds a way. You know, you think about all bands that come out of here. It's not, you know, it comes from... perseverance.
Yeah, just different paths, you know, wherever you are. There's like a different path that you, everybody's on their own kind of path. And if you stay on the path, you know, you can make something out of it. At least that's how I feel about it. You know, like you don't, you know, for me, my goal is to try to play as much as possible and have fun. And that's it. So, I mean, if that's, you know, what your definition of making art is, then that's,
yeah,
then that's
good you can, enough. It can, yeah, it's true. And you can always do that. There's always places to play.
But I find you know, do you think that in Germany and like places in Europe and stuff, the like, how do they feel about American bands? I feel like, from my experience, it's like they're very excited, you know. And it's different. Like when a German band comes here, I feel like people aren't like, oh man, we got to go see that German band that's coming, because everything is so like overblown and like it's hard to find out about everything that's going on because it's so much happening. But I feel like when American band goes over to some place in Europe, it's like seemingly, maybe this is just me thinking this, but. That's why I want your opinion. It's like, oh, it's like a big deal. Like, oh, we got to go see that American band that's coming. Like, do you guys have any experience with that? Or?
Well, we get that because sometimes people see us as like a foreign band over here, although that's only half true, kind of.
Yeah.
No, we get that. We get a very welcoming, vibe from, you know, people towards us being from elsewhere.
Right.
It's...
Yeah, I mean, I think also outside of New York City, people get excited about touring bands.
Yeah, yeah.
And here, there's just so much going on, you lose the overview.
Right. And if you go to, like, the middle of the country, like Lincoln, Nebraska or something, that sticks out to me. It's, like, one of the places I had one of the best shows of my life. Like, it was people were there, merch-wise, we made money. Like, that's... I don't want to say that that's the only reason why it was a good show, but, you know, it really helped us that we made a certain amount of money just selling our T-shirts to these people that were, like, crazy in the middle of the country. But the root of it is that they were just happy that you were there because people don't seem to come there that much. And so it's more grateful, whereas they don't have a lot of options of cool things to do. And here we're just like, eh, I'll go out next Tuesday, fuck this, I don't care. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I'm coming from work, I don't need this.
Yeah, I just got off the art train. I'm a little wiped, you know. So, so you guys were recently on tour. You guys finished a tour like maybe 2 weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago. And where did that take you? Like from where to where?
We started in New York and went through Pittsburgh and over through Ohio into Chicago and down Indiana, Louisville.
Wow.
Tennessee, Nashville, Knoxville,
Does anything...
North Carolina, up through Virginia.
Wow.
Baltimore.
So you were like 3 weeks, 2.5 weeks, something like that?
Two weeks.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, 2.5.
Yeah.
And what is any show like stick out in your mind or any place that maybe you hadn't been before that you were like, wow, this is awesome. This scene is great.
We played at a really cool festival in...
It was just Concord? Outside Charlotte, North Carolina in Concord. In a field.
I like that.
Cold. That was good. What was it called?
It was the Shakedown Field Day.
Oh, that's cool. Is that like a one-day festival or something?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. How many bands are on this bill? Was it like a lot?
there's a band on every...
Every half hour.
Every half hour from like noon to probably midnight.
Oh, yeah. So they're they're churning them out then.
That's like a hot mess.
They had two stages.
Oh, okay. So they had one on and then one off. Yeah, yeah.
That's cool.
Okay, that makes it a little easier. But those festivals can be kind of, get your shit on and let's go. You know, like kind of like stressful. I mean, from at least my experience, I don't know.
I mean, it was very DIY, but they were very organized, actually. They were very organized, it was awesome.
That's cool. Very welcoming audience and people capable of what they were doing, so it was just fun.
That's nice when that works out. Yeah. When you get people who know what they're doing. So the crowd reacted well, I assume.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they were awesome.
What was the, on the flip side, what was like the worst?
Well, that was the thing about this tour that we've been saying is that there wasn't really a dud in the bunch.
Hey,
yeah,
that's good.
Very
yeah.
happy for
it
you.
Was the best tour in that way.
Yeah, because, I mean, usually you're out there for a couple of weeks. I mean, at least one of them is going to be like, that didn't really work out. Like the Monday night and, you know.
New York City.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
No one was there that night.
Exactly. Well, I guess that brings, so you guys ended the tour in New York City.
Which is always a nice touch.
Yeah, which, you know, but it was kind of like a homecoming, and it was actually a really great show that we played together.
Yeah, where'd you guys play that night?
Rock Shop.
Oh, okay.
I had played the Rock Shop when it like first opened. It was like, I don't even know, like 2009, 2010. And we had a very bad experience. So like we hadn't played there since then. And since then, it's changed dramatically. And it's been, I mean, everything was great. The sound was amazing. The sound guy, Peter, I'll never forget you, man. You made me feel so loved and welcomed. And you got me a hi-hat stand, which was very nice of you. So, Peter, if you're listening, God bless you and God love you. And so you guys closed the show. I think you closed the show with this next song that I would like to play, Hazyland, right? Because that closes the record. And this is after, I mean, you guys are very eclectic. The album specifically is very, it covers so many bases. Like Patch of Blue is kind of like a weird, sporadic, odd number. And then,
well said.
You like that?
I did like that.
And then there's a song called Before I Die, which you have a video for that as well. And that's like a fucking 80s Britpop ballad. It's like, is this the same band? Like, this is insane. And then Hazyland, for me, covers all the bases of what I think music should be. I mean, it's like it goes against the grain. It's ambitious. It reminds me of something that I would like to write with my band. It has parts. You're not worried about, oh, no, this is over 3.5 minutes.
It's got balls.
Shit. Yeah. You know, like it's got balls in it, and it rocks. And it rocks. And it's got the ups and the downs. And it's got a ridiculous, like, guitar solo that just goes on for like 2 minutes or something over the everything else. It's insane. So you
got
to keep.
I got it ready, but no, you got to check your mail, bro. You got like 10,000 unread emails.
Yeah, that's another problem I have in my life.
I just wanted to get. I want that to be known. But here we go. We got Hazyland coming on.
time. But anyway, we're it's the Stroll Show on Radio Free Brooklyn. We're sitting here with Frog Belly and Symphony. And that song was Hazy Land off the album that I would like you to explain the title of real quick, if you could.
Blue Bright Owl Sleep came from...
I just found it on a piece of paper, so eventually became the album title. I think you wrote it.
I did write it. I was sitting in my room for like 3 hours trying to come up with lyrics to one of our songs, and I ended up with just 4 words on the paper, and they were those 4 words.
Okay, so owl isn't like some weird British term for it means something, or it's just owl, like, ow, I stubbed my toe, or... It, okay,
yes.
That's cool. Okay, I like that. So that was recorded with Martin Beese, as we were talking about. We were just talking about the awesome room sound on that record, the drums and the vocals. And I guess we're kind of running out of time to kind of get too deep into that. But what was your favorite aspect of recording with Martin, if you could quickly...
His room is amazing.
And his dedication is amazing.
Yeah.
And that's all it takes.
Yeah.
His room, his desk, and his dedication. The combination of the three just creates magic.
Yeah, I agree. And it sounds magical and very ethereal. Is it ethereal or ethereal? Is it
that? I don't know. That's,
like,
that's
is it Thomas
good...
or is it Tomas?
Ethereal? We'll leave that up to you, listener.
I like ethereal.
Ethereal does sound better. It sounds almost like a
C-3PO.
Yeah, oh, I like that.
Like a Lord of the Rings character, ethereal Longfellow or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
So
Leanna Knoll or something.
Okay, so we've been here with Frog Belly and Symphony. Thank you guys very much for coming.
Yeah, and what's your? We're gonna talk about your most current album.
Yeah,
that you guys
we'll talk
just...
about the most current album and what you guys have coming up, if anything, soon.
We're working on a new album at the moment. We put a remix album out just a few months ago, and now we're working on brand new stuff, and we're hoping to have a new album together for the beginning of next year, maybe.
Okay, yeah, because I remember when I saw you guys last, you had just finished recording. You, like, toured and then recorded and then played a show, and I was just like, these motherfuckers. They're doing it all. That's awesome. So yeah, so really nothing to report as far as that. That's in progress. Not with Martin. That's a different studio, right? That you're working with, not BC.
Well, at the moment we're just demoing. We don't actually know what we're doing. We're just putting the new material together, and we're still kind of arranging. We're hoping to get the opportunity to just go in the studio and record the next album in one go, but we're not sure.
Well, right. I look forward to.
Yeah, we're looking forward. Yeah,
sure.
Definitely. And you guys are on Facebook, Twitter.
Everywhere.
SoundCloud, all that
Instagram,
good stuff.
Yeah,
they're on Google, so just hit
they're on Google.
And thank you guys again for coming.
Yeah, thank you.
Frog Belly and Symphony, everybody. Yeah. Check them out.
Thank you.
This has been The Stroll Show on Radio Free Brooklyn.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Thanks, guys.